This is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. We are in the middle of the holiday season, and when I say holiday season, I don't mean to adopt a secular description or a humanist description or a politically correct description of the season that we're in or the seasons that we're in. First of all, we are in the Christmas season. So, Merry Christmas to every one of you. Some people, some Christians are offended if you say Merry Christmas. And I understand why, and I've explained it on the program. I'm very much aware of the pagan origins of Christmas, how Constantine in Rome attempted to synthesize both biblical Christianity and the pagan holidays, along with the Catholic Church, into kind of making a blend of Christmas and pagan religions, as well as Easter, which can also be called Ishtar, which was one of the names of Semiramis, the wife of Nimrod. So I'm very well aware of the pagan origins of the Christmas holiday. But this is something that I used to say on the radio years ago, 15, 16, 17 years ago, I used to say this because I encouraged the Paul McGuire show. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. The Paul McGuire show broadcasted heavily on FM, AM stations in just about every major market in the United States. So we were on like 3 to 4 hours drive time live Monday through Friday. And we had a massive audience. And I would encourage and motivate and exhort the listeners when they were in retail stores or wherever they could exert their influence to insist that Merry Christmas be said. And people thought, well, you know, that's kind of like, why are you promoting a pagan holiday? Or that's such a trivial thing. And my point was, no, it's not a trivial thing. It's not a trivial thing to continually to say Merry Christmas. And I'll explain why. With the same reasoning I used, this is back during the invasion of Iraq. And remember when U.S. troops were invading Iraq, and there were these giant statues of Saddam Hussein. I mean, there were huge statues of Saddam Hussein. And there was one enormous statue of Saddam Hussein. And the U.S. troops were there, and the Iraqi people were there. And the Iraqi people were revolting against the tyranny of Saddam Hussein. And they pulled, one of the first things they did was they stripped the land of Iraq of these monumental symbols of the dictator Saddam Hussein. So the angry people of Iraq threw ropes around this giant statue of Saddam Hussein to topple it. And you could see it worldwide via television, this giant statue crashing to the ground into pieces as the mobs toppled the symbol of the former Iraq dictatorship. Now, I explained to them that in every warfare, in every battle, in every conflict, any general, any student of military history, any person who understands military science at all, they always understand that when you're in a warfare, and make no mistake, we are in a warfare, a very deep and serious warfare. Whenever you're in a warfare, symbols, archetypes, flags, banners, and things of that nature are of paramount importance in declaring to your enemies or declaring to your own people victory, occupation, or fear, and retreat. Now, let me be even more specific. We're talking about a spiritual warfare. But the same principle applies in spiritual warfare as it does to physical material warfare. Again, symbols are important in spiritual warfare. So, if there is a battle in America between the spiritual forces of secularism, atheism, secular humanism, Satanism, pagan religions, and the truth of Christianity, and yes, indeed, there is a massive spiritual war going on between these different groups, then in spiritual warfare, just like physical warfare, symbols are of the utmost importance. So to retreat, for Christians to retreat on anything which is a symbol of Christianity or a statement of Christianity or represents Christianity, whether it's wording like Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, whatever it is, for Christians to retreat is reflected by the presence of symbols that represent biblical Christianity or the absence of symbols that represent biblical Christianity. And on top of that, there's another very important dimension, which is absolutely essential for every Bible-believing Christian to understand, and that is the direct relationship that has always existed between symbols, statues, archetypes, architecture, visual things, musical things, wording, and demonic or godly powers. Now, this second area requires a enhanced understanding of the nature of the spiritual battle, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But it is essential that you understand that. Let me just throw out a couple of concepts here. It is not an accident, for example, that Adolf Hitler, the head of Nazi Germany, who was deeply involved in the occult, as were the top generals of Nazi Germany, the top people that ruled Nazi Germany, they were an occultic political party. Excuse me, they were an occult party first. The Nazi Party was an occult party first, a political party second. And the occult party names behind the Third Reich were things like the Vril Society, speaking of the occultic Vril force, the Thule Society, which speaks of the legendary island of Thule, where occult events allegedly happened. The swastika comes from ancient Tibet. This is not a matter of opinion. You can look at photographs and see pictures of the Buddha that are like over 1,000 years old. And you'll see that in these pictures of the Buddha, they're pictures of statues of the Buddha. There are swastikas on the head of the Buddha. And the swastika was an occultic symbol used in ancient Tibet occultic rituals. And the swastika was also the symbol of the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler. So that symbol of the swastika is more than branding. It's more than a design. There is a connection. It's so imperative to grasp this on the multidimensional level in which I'm trying to articulate it. It is more, the swastika is far more than a symbol of branding. It's far more than a logo. It's far more than, you know, a visual associated with something in the physical. It's far more than that. There, it's The symbol, occultic symbols are anchor points in the physical world. Occultic symbols are anchor points in the physical world to spiritual demonic strongholds in the invisible realm. In fact, they actually function as a portal. They function as a conduit of demonic energy channeled out of the invisible realm into the physical realm and expressed in part by physical symbols. That's how important they are. And people have always understood this. Now, back to why it's important to say Merry Christmas. It's important to say Merry Christmas, and this is why I would exhort, you know, countless thousands of people day after day for years during the Christmas season to do this. Because at that time, see, things have changed because of the persistence of Christians and also because of the boldness of the current president. But at that time, the corporate America in the retail industry, hamburger retailers, every facet, power facet of society was militantly not allowing anybody, shopping malls, they wouldn't allow people to say, their employees to say Merry Christmas. They wouldn't allow anything that said Merry Christmas. It could only generically say Happy Holidays. Their employees were only allowed to say Happy Holidays. There's some of that. It's still going on today. And then you'd have this element of Christians very upset over the pagan nature of Christmas, but they're missing the point. There's various spiritual battles, but you see, you have to understand that in a culture in which symbols, statements, references, history, the Ten Commandments, crucifixes, crosses, and all the rest of that stuff has been methodically stripped from our society, making it secular and stripping it of anything even remotely Christian, the words Christ and Christmas become important. Because what they do is they make a statement to society, and especially young children who have no idea, many in our post-Christian culture have no idea of what the birth of Christ means. They have no idea. And so Christmas is an opportunity to pour a window of light, some degree of the light, the true light of Christmas, into their hearts. And so important that that tradition is preserved and that people don't, you know, again, I understand why people do this. They want to show the Lord that they're holy and devoted to the Lord. I respect that. But you also have to choose your battles and be wise in your battles. Now, if in your spirit you feel that the Lord is telling you that you shouldn't do anything to celebrate Christmas, then obey the Lord. I mean, I'm not telling you to violate your conscience before the Lord. I'm giving you simply my perspective, and I don't claim to be God. So, when you have Christmas celebrations traditionally held across America, people would have Christmas trees, Santa Clauses, elves. Not all of that is necessarily pagan, but it was innocuous. And it demeaned from the true meaning of Christmas. We all agree. Some of it did have pagan origins. If you want to be technical about it, the Christmas tree has pagan origins to it. Now, the point is, though, that many, many people, and to this day, was walking around the neighborhood in which I lived, and I noticed that most of the Christmas decorations were secular, in the sense that it was about Santa Claus and elves and stuff. But, you know, there would be a certain percentage, I don't know what the percentage was, but a certain percentage that would have the Santa Clauses and all that stuff, but then they would have the manger scene. So they'd have the manger, they'd have the baby Jesus, they'd have Joseph and Mary, and so on and so forth. The Star of Bethlehem. Now, you may not think that that's a big deal, but in a secularized society, that's a huge deal. Because there's a huge percentage of kids in any city, town, community in America, there's a huge percentage of kids, and even adults to some degree, who have no idea, who have never been taught what the Christmas story is, who know nothing about the Christmas story. So as they're walking along and they're observing manger scenes, they're seeing more than elves and Santa Claus. They're seeing a manger. They're seeing Mary. They're seeing Joseph. They're seeing the Star of Bethlehem, the wise men, et cetera, et cetera. What they're seeing is a partial glimpse of the Christmas story. And don't kid yourself. Kids, children, young adults are highly observant, very perceptive, and that may be the first time they ever see the story of Christmas illustrated in visual symbols. And so you may not think it means anything because you've had an exposure to the true story of Christmas, but we're talking to a person whose soul is starving for any exposure to the true story of Christmas. And many of them, the only time they hear anything about Christmas is when they look at these manger scenes or they see a manger scene on television, which is rare, but it does happen occasionally. So this is important. It's more than a symbol. Yes, we know that the birth date of Christ on Christmas was not on December 25th. We understand that. These are all givens. But do you think children and adults who know nothing about the Christmas story, it's not justifiable to not give them an opportunity to understand the true meaning of Christmas because a secular society doesn't get the correct date for the birth of Christ. That's not justifiable. It's not being discerning in terms of the nature of the spiritual warfare. Plus, the child or young adult or whatever asks their friends or asks their parents, well, what is this? Who? What's this? Because people drive around. They walk around in neighborhoods and they look at Christmas displays. It's just a tradition that still goes on. The day may come, my friends, when that tradition of being able to walk, you know, I would really like those that are against any celebration of Christmas to hear what I'm saying and to hear it very clearly. Unless the Lord intervenes, the day may come sooner than you think when any open celebration or inward celebration of Christmas will be made illegal, in which they won't even allow Christmas trees. There are many places and schools and stuff in America that they don't even allow secular Christmas displays. They don't even allow the words Merry Christmas. It's got to be Happy Holidays or Winter, whatever. And they don't allow Merry Christmas. So the day is coming when it may be illegal to have any kind of secular Christmas displays on lawns or in houses, as in many public schools. They don't even allow a secular display of Christmas from a secular perspective. That means no Santa Clauses, no elves and stuff like that. Why? Because unlike Christians, they understand that even though the secular Christmas symbols like Santa Claus and the elves and the whatever that thing is that Santa Claus flies on, what do you call it? A chariot? I don't know what you call it. A sled, excuse me. A sled. Even though those things are entirely secular, the enemies of the gospel of Jesus Christ understand that because of religious traditions in America, these so-called secular symbols often lead to discussions and open doors for the true meaning of Christmas, as does saying Merry Christmas to people, then giving in to the temptation of saying Happy Holidays. I used to warn people that they had to be discerning, because it wasn't all that long ago, and it's still the case in many retailers, that if you're an employee or a cashier or something, and you were to offer up the words Merry Christmas, you could get fired. In many corporations, it was just you did not say Merry Christmas, and that stands to this day. It's required that you say generically Happy Holidays. Now, the problem with that is that has changed, but I can't tell every one of you what to do because every situation is different. But because there's been a pushback by Christians and a pushback by powerful people in the media and a pushback by others, the politically correct dictatorship over people's mouths has been loosened. And you can make the choice to say Merry Christmas. And it may be pushing the envelope a little bit, but in many places it's not pushing the envelope that much. And with wisdom, you ought to push the envelope in the direction of saying Merry Christmas. Because when I began to lead this call for people to say Merry Christmas, not in an angry sense and stuff. I mean, this isn't going back all that many years. And the battle hasn't been won, but there were shopping malls all across America, and still are right now, where they wanted people to come in and spend their money, but all they would do is say Happy Holidays. I told you, I was in the Staples retail store, and I'm going to name Staples by name, not because I'm picking on them. I'm a customer of Staples. But the problem is, when I walked into Staples like 2 weeks ago, there was a giant sign that said Joy. And, you know, I was really repulsed. I was repulsed because I looked at this giant sign that says Joy, and my question is, what joy? What are you talking about? To have a sign that says joy out of context to anything real or meaningful, first of all, is an act of complete cowardice of their corporate board, their CFO, their CEO, et cetera, et cetera. Because they're the ones that voted on it. And instead of taking a stand to please the overwhelming majority of their customers, in Staples across the United States, the overwhelming majority of their customers most likely are Catholic or Protestant or Jewish or celebrate one of those traditions. And they want to hear Happy Hanukkah, or they want to hear Merry Christmas. And that would please the larger majority of their customers. It is the smaller percentage of their customers, very vocal, by the way, but a smaller percentage, that scream and yell and threaten all kinds of trouble if you don't force everybody to be censored and make everybody say Happy Holidays. But they didn't even say Happy Holidays at Staples. It was just Joy. And I shared with you that I struck up a conversation with the manager, and he privately agreed with me. He said, I said the same thing to my district manager and my company. But he works there, so he doesn't have the freedom to say what he really would like to say. I do. I don't work there. And I told them that politely. We had a nice conversation. But, you know, I'm a very direct person and a very bold person. And I'll remind people in a pleasant tone of voice, you know, I don't work here. So I really don't care what your corporate board says, or your CFO or your CEO. I understand that you have to abide by their wishes. But I'm a customer here. I can express my thoughts freely, and I intend to do so. And I said, I realize it's not your fault. You know, you're working here. You have to follow orders. But I said, tell your district manager and your corporate people that a lot of your customers, such as myself, and I gave them the decades I'd been shopping in Staples, I find it offensive to walk into your store and see joy. Joy, that is a meaningless word. You're stripping Christ out of, when you put up just the secularized words joy, okay, when you make the corporate decision, and that's where it comes from, it doesn't come from the stores, it comes from the corporation. When you make the corporate decision to just say joy, or just say happy holidays, what you're really doing is you're ripping out the word Christ. That's exactly what you're doing. Let's not play games. Your choice to only put up the word joy or to say happy holidays is in reality a choice to strip out and rip out a word Christ, because it's the word Christ that is targeted. And yet, without Christ, there's no reason for Christmas, and there's no reason to say happy holidays. It's like falling down the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland. If you take away Hanukkah, and you take away Jesus Christ and the birth of Jesus Christ, then there's no reason to celebrate the holidays. The holidays, what holidays? You just destroyed them by refusing to mention the holidays that we're supposed to be happy about. How do you expect us to be joyous when you just gutted and killed, essentially, the holidays? By removing the name of the season that causes the happiness or the joy, such as Christ in Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah or whatever. And well, I used to go on the radio and I'd say this talk for hours about how this had a direct impact on retail sales, that if these retail giants, the CEOs, the board members that are out of touch with their customers, but they get the big fat paychecks. But they're out of touch. How the idea behind retailing is to make shopping a fun experience and the environment pleasant, because any idiot who's running any retail store knows that the way you get people's money, which is the objective in retailing, is that you create a happy, positive environment. You don't insult your customers. You make your customers feel happy. You honor your customer. And oh yeah, you do something that American retailers have forgotten to do. You know, remember the old expression, the customer's always right? Well, the customer may not always be right, but the customer needs to be treated that way. Because it's that environment that causes people to spend big bucks in your store. Because if you're going to be nasty and be a Scrooge and outlaw Merry Christmas, or if you have to have an awkward encounter with some manager, and there's always a million managers in every retail store these days, because they decided decades ago to do with all the customer complaints. They knew that the public always asked for the manager, so now they just call everybody who works there basically a manager. So you'll have 10 or 20 managers in just about any store. I mean, assistant manager, evening manager, or whatever. Everybody's the manager. Because if you say, can I speak to the manager? Like, it's like half the store could potentially respond. And if you say Merry Christmas to one of the managers or to the cashier, and they respond by saying Happy Holidays, I'm offended. And unlike a lot of people, I will express the fact that I'm not going to pick on the cashier. I'm not going to pick on the 20 managers. They have no control over it. But I'll say something like, tell your boss or whatever. Or I will, if I have time, make a communication to the corporate headquarters that if I say Merry Christmas, say it back out of respect. Because I know many times, and I never pick on the cashier and the 20 managers because they don't have any authority. It's not their fault. And many times they'd like to say Merry Christmas. They can't. But I've noticed because of public pressure, and without public pressure, no change is made. You see, because there is going to be public pressure. The atheists, the humanists, they are going to pressure the retailers to censor everything. So if people who are Christians or Jews or whatever will not make their vote be heard by pressuring politely, the true management of the stores, then the stores won't respond because the stores will always take the lazy way out, always. So I have found, though, that over the years, many cashiers, if you say Merry Christmas, they'll say Merry Christmas. Or many times they'll say Merry Christmas anyway, knowing they're risking their necks. And the point is, though, see, I think it's spiritual to speak out politely, lovingly, not in some legalistic, not in some mean-spirited legalistic way, not in some self-righteous way, like kindly, like you're talking to a fellow person. I think true spirituality confronts. Counterfeit spirituality hides and retreats, says nothing. True spirituality always confronts in love, but not rudely, not arrogantly. So the point is that these symbols are important. Now, because a lot of people in radio and other places began to encourage their listeners to speak up for Christmas, there's been many positive gains, but the battle is not over yet. The forces of secularism are still raging. They would love to censor everything. But they can't. You see, if you stand up for what you believe in the appropriate way, things change. Things change. But the point I'm trying to make is this is not about the elevation of pagan symbols. This is about tiny glimmers of light which add up to larger bursts of light and give an opportunity, however subtle, to communicate the true Christmas message. What Christmas is, it's a window of opportunity, okay, to spread the good news of Jesus Christ. It's the same thing with hymns or songs they sing on television. The natural course of things is to make all the songs secular. But people who are smart manage to weave in traditional Christmas songs or true Christmas songs into the mix, either on TV or at a school or at a public gathering or whatever. And you hear it all the time. There's somebody who wants to make sure the true meaning of Christmas was being expressed. So these are good things, but it requires that you stand up and shine a light and don't bow in. I mean, you have to use your God-given intelligence. Obviously, if you bow, you know, there may be pressures on you at work or whoever you work for that would cost you your job or something. And I'm not saying you should go out and get fired over it. But there's other environments where you can say Merry Christmas, but you should take advantage to say it. Because public pressure changes things, and you have to keep the pressure up to talk about the true meaning of Christmas, otherwise it will be stamped out. And again, we have to understand that in a spiritual war, which we're in, a spiritual battle that we're in, symbols, words, phrases, songs, pictures all mean something. And I can go over endless examples of symbols and how symbols are tied to spiritual power. And I use an example of a swastika, but the cross, a cross, not like the cross of the KKK, that's a demonic power, but the cross of Christ is a symbol that I was very active in fighting for in Los Angeles and Southern California. And remain active in fighting for the right to openly display the cross of Christ. The Los Angeles, that battle was lost because the city of Los Angeles decided that there was a microscopic cross, literally. It was so tiny, it was ridiculous. A microscopic cross on the logo or the official symbol of the city of Los Angeles. And I think it was the ACLU or one of these militant groups targeted and sued the city of Los Angeles and demanded that the microscopic cross on the official city symbol of Los Angeles be removed. Well, all the churches and the majority of the people did not want it removed. And I participated in vocalizing a strong opposition to its removal because the removal was evil. The cross was so tiny, first of all, most people could barely see it. But the point is, you don't give up symbols in a spiritual battle because the next time they come around, they're going to want more and more. Well, the politicians, sadly to say, even though there was an enormous turnout of Christians, They gave in, and at an enormous expense to the city and county of Los Angeles, they removed the cross from the official city symbol. But you see, that's how intent the enemies of the gospel of Jesus Christ are in wiping out every symbol, every reference to Christianity. And I would suggest to you that if the Christians had continued to take a stand for it, the city would have backed down. But Christians often don't demonstrate any staying power. It was a symbol that did not have to go because it was hardly offensive. But there's other things where there's a cross on so-called public land, and then there's these legal battles to strip the cross from public land. Why do you think that is? It's because the atheists and secular humanists and those of a communist Marxist belief system, they have said it in their own paperwork and books and agenda. I quote all this stuff in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, which you can get to give to somebody as a gift by going to paulmcguire.us. It will be shipped to you in like 2 or 3 days prior to priority mail. So in The Greatest Battle, I talk about how whenever there's a cultural revolution being implemented by militant secular humanism or socialism or Marxism or whatever, they strip the land of any symbol of God, of family, of country, et cetera, et cetera. It's a systematic purging. A systematic wiping out of any symbol that has to do with what communism and atheism despise, which is the family, which is God, Christ and Christmas, the Ten Commandments, and so on and so forth. It's always an all-out attack on these things. So you see that that battle's still going on. So you have to ask yourself the question. You have so many Christians who are apathetic about whether there's symbols of Christianity openly displayed in our land and in our public buildings and in schools, et cetera, et cetera. Many Christians that are ambivalent about it and wishy-washy about it. Okay, so we understand that, right? So, but how come on the other side of the fence, militant atheists and humanists are so strategic, so committed to the removal of those symbols while Christians are apathetic? The reason for it is the atheists and the humanists, they have an understanding of the importance of symbols, and that's why they're busy removing all symbols of Christianity from the land. Whereas Christians, many of them, have no understanding of the importance of symbols. Once again, knowledge is power, and the people that have the knowledge have the power. So that's why it's important to stand up for symbols and pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And it is important. It's just far deeper. Many people think, oh, this is just superficial. It doesn't mean anything. No, it's not superficial, and it means everything. The only thing that's superficial is not your perception that these symbols are superficial. What's superficial is the fact that you have a superficial understanding of the historical importance and the spiritual importance of preserving symbols for what you believe in the physical realm, out in the open, et cetera, et cetera. You can no longer afford to have a superficial understanding of that spiritual dynamic, because the people that oppose Christianity, as well as the principalities and powers, do have a robust, multi-leveled, deep understanding of the importance of symbols. Therefore, it's incumbent upon you to step it up and learn how to play your game and learn how to play your game and win it and quit losing your game and hiding in the corner. Now, I know it was blunt, but, you know, it is what it is. Has to be said. Has to be said. You can get the greatest battle. And why not give, instead of an electric toothbrush or something like that for somebody, why not give them a copy of a book that can change their life? You can get that book, and it can be shipped to you or somebody you want it shipped to right away by simply going to paulmaguire.us. It's paulmaguire.us. Now, I want to talk about the importance of walking with the Lord and in the presence of the Lord during what the secular society calls the holidays or Christmas time, et cetera, et cetera. Because on one hand, we should celebrate Christmas, the true meaning of Christmas, like Jesus is the reason for the season. But on the other hand, we need to make sure that we understand that Christmas time, whether it's traditional Christian Merry Christmas time, or a mixture of pagan and Jesus Christ's birth Christmas time, or simply, quote, secularized holidays Christmas time, what happens every year during, quote, the holidays, but I'm speaking of Christmas and Hanukkah, etc., there is a psychological cycle that occurs during this time of year. And the psychological cycle is that the holidays, and I'm going to say holidays because I'm not going to stop to say Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah like every 60 seconds. The holiday season, but I'm referring to Christmas and Christ, where supposedly families get together, et cetera, et cetera, is a time of high expectation by people in our culture. And that high expectation is generated by commercialism, retail advertising, et cetera, where billions of dollars are spent trying to arouse in you happy holiday feelings, in some cases, Christmas feelings, celebration feelings, or whatever. Billions of dollars are spent in the effort to generate a mood, a festive mood, for the purpose of getting people to buy gifts. Because for most retailers, they do more business during the week of holidays between like a little bit before Christmas time to like a day or two after New Year's, whatever the total day count is. They do more business during that time period than they do during the entire rest of the year. That's how important a successful Christmas season is to retailers, okay? So they spend a fortune trying to get you in the mood, and they spend a fortune manipulating you with subtle subconscious emotions of guilt, which are designed to target you to attempt to alleviate the guilt. And what is the guilt? The guilt is they're trying to make you feel guilty about not being a good mother, not being a good father, not loving people enough, not caring about your loved ones enough. So they arouse. This is intentional advertising strategy. They deliberately arouse, especially jewelry ads. They deliberately add. They deliberately arouse feelings of guilt, and then they tell you subconsciously you can solve your guilt. You can be a good husband. You can be a good father. You can be a good mother, and on and on and on. If you buy this Cadillac Escalade for your wife, if you buy this diamond ring, if you buy your kid all these toys like all the other neighbors do, if you buy whatever this, however old your kid is, I guarantee you there are toys in the forms of computer games or computers or computer virtual reality things or whatever it is, there are high ticket items that your kids are going to be clamoring for through commercials that their friends are getting. And the retail industry is going to try to get you to feel guilty for not spending the big bucks or going into debt. So you have that dynamic. And then you have the dynamic, people caught up in the artificial euphoria, the artificial euphoria of an idealized Christmas. Now, what do I mean by an idealized Christmas? People have these Christmas memories, okay? And during every Christmas, there's this idealized image that's programmed into us by the advertising culture. And it's this, it's a weird contradiction because on one hand, they're trying to brainwash us now with a secularized Christmas. But on the other hand, they can't really let go of that subconsciously because if they do, nobody will buy anything. So they use lots of images of people driving their brand new cars that they want you to buy in the snow, people traveling for the holidays, pictures of families sitting together, eating and you know, happy, the kids having toys, everybody's smiling, everybody's wearing nice sweaters, everybody is dressed relatively nicely or comparatively nicely. You know, there's a very expensive Christmas tree with ornaments. So the house is done with lots of Christmas lights. You'll even see in some movies or I saw this TV show with John Legend and his wife the other night celebrating Christmas. And, you know, the family is over to sing hymns. And in his case, the hymns were basically secular, but they're hymns. So it's an idealized Christmas because the reality is, some people have nice Christmases, but most people don't have this Disneyland Christmas experience that's being projected out there into the mass consciousness. That's what I'm trying to say. We have, since childhood, programmed into us this Disneyland, euphoric, Magic Kingdom ride Christmas programmed expectation into us, okay? Wives try to be the perfect wife. they slave wrapping gifts, they slave shopping, they slave trying to look attractive, and they end up doing most of the work. They're stressed out, the relatives, you know what I'm talking about. But what happens is there's a disparity between this idealized projection of Christmas and what would be called the individual sober reality. And I mean sober reality. I'm gonna keep the word sober reality as a mixed metaphor for hopefully you'll be sober during the holidays. And sober reality meaning you're psychologically, you've got to kind of talk yourself down from a hypnotized high of an idealized Christmas, because the bottom line is that kind of euphoric, idealized Disneyland Christmas is not the real Disney, is not the real Christmas time experience for many people. You have single parents, divorced, kids stress with relatives, stress with siblings, a lot of interpersonal stress that goes back to childhood memories. Okay, things are not all happy the way they should be. I mean, don't get depressed because you're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm just trying to talk to you about reality. Things are not all as magical as they're supposed to be. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to rain on your parade. So don't get mad at me because I'm not trying to rain on your parade. I'm simply trying to tell you that it's not Disneyland time. So in a minute, I want to come back and talk to you about things you can do to get through the holidays victoriously and not get caught up in this psychological manipulation in which you will only feel depressed, guilty, sad, And again, I'm not trying to rain in your parade, but look, let's face reality. Holiday time, Christmas time, or whatever you want to call it, and you know what I like to call it, is a time of intense psychological stress because of the projection of an overly idealized Christmas. Okay? So we'll be back in a second. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. If this program will help somebody, and I believe that it will, in ministry groups, people, then send them a link of this program. This is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. By the way, before I forget, we have a Paradise Mountain church meeting coming up this Thursday, December 19th, at the Sportsman's Lodge. I'd love to see you there. Map, directions, all the rest of that stuff is at paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. It'll be at 6 p.m. sharp at the Sportsman's Lodge in Studio City, California. And I'd love to see you there. Also, there was something else I wanted to tell you. Oh, please start setting yourself up to receive our videos and radio program and other media through Brighteon.com. There are changes happening in the wonderful world of the internet and social media. And to avoid potential censorship, it would be wise if you would get in the habit of listening to us on services like Brighteon and many other programs, because there are people who, very powerful people in our nation, that want to censor Christian, what they call conservative or Bible prophecy content. And I would hate you to one day try to turn on the program, not be able to find it. So I'm giving you a heads up now. To be proactive and learn how to locate our programming. It's all under Paul McGuire Ministries on the Brighteon.com channel. It's all under Paul McGuire Ministries. And lots of people are moving there. But you can't count on some social media companies. They're in a secret war against Christianity. Unfortunately, that's the case, but it's true. Okay, so the holidays, because of these idealized images, and then you go back into everybody's individual past, and most people didn't have, and increasingly greater numbers, the larger percentage of people no longer have some idealized Disneyland childhood experience either. Most people don't come from this wonderful world of living color, you know, the perfect dad, the perfect mom, the perfect siblings, okay? Not that they ever did, but that illusion is fading. People being married multiple times, single mothers, single fathers, and I'm not knocking anybody for whatever they went through. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that the holidays, Christmas time, Hanukkah, Thanksgiving, can be a time where painful memories surface. And I've also noticed that guilt surfaces and people start to feel, I should have done this, or I should have been more loving, or I should have done this. And all these regrets, for some reason, the time compression zone of the holidays brings up shame, it brings up depression, it brings up anxiety, it brings up guilt, it brings up tension because, you know, all of a sudden you're going to be having Christmas dinner with relatives that you may have a very nebulous relationship with. The expectations of people are high, especially if you have kids, they're high. You may be newly married and your expectations are high. There's a lot of pressures on people psychologically. People are traveling distances, so they're tired. Many pressures on people who are functioning as hosts or hostesses for Christmas celebrations or whatever. So it's a time when the psychological pressures increase. And therefore, it's not accidental. You will observe this. I have observed this for decades. That like clockwork, people, when I say people, I'm talking about in society that I mix with and people that I meet and know, is that it's like a ticking time bomb. Around this time of year, people start to sob, they start to have this emotional catharsis, crying and tension and weird behavior. I'm not saying this for the purpose of condemnation. I'm saying is that all those bottled up emotions start to come out during Christmas time. And therefore, there's a real conflict between this idealized image of Christmas and then the psychological forces and the psychological pain and memories that are connected to Christmas. Because especially if people in their memories, if bad things happened to them during the Christmas season in the past, they got drunk at an office party and God knows what happened. Or somebody got divorced or they discovered their husband or their wife cheated them on them Christmas Day. I'm not trying to be creative in my doom and gloom depiction, but this is life. So when bad things happen, so then what happens is that every time there's a holiday, the memory of those bad things or multiple bad things can happen. And so it's a psychological pressure cooker environment, all right, heightened by secularization and promotion and things like that. So the point is, God doesn't want you in a pressure cooker. And the other point is, if you learn to be a little bit detached and recognize that you may find emotions coming out of you that are not quite like you, don't go into a tailspin and just get sucked into the vortex of emotional despair or conflict or whatever. Recognize that you're reacting to the psychological pressures and psychological energy being generated by all the people that you're talking to. You know, just in the last week, I ended up people calling me or calling other people, relatives and stuff, all going through some kind of emotional crisis, which was due to emotional memories and stuff. And I try to be as loving as I can, and as I try to minister to people as much as I can. But at the same time, I have to guard myself from getting sucked into that myself. Not because I'm selfish, but because it's like an emotional contagion. And the thing is somewhat an illusion, because you see, all these problems were there long before the holidays got here. All these problems or their memories will be there after the Christmas season holiday thing is over. It's just they're all being aroused and coming to the surface at this time. So a little bit of detachment, a little bit of wisdom, give yourself a big break when those feelings start to cascade through you, that you could have done this better, you could have done that better, you could have been a better mother, grandmother, grandfather, whatever. Guilt, you know, could have been a better parent, could have loved this somebody better, could have. You'll go crazy. Give yourself a break. If you've asked God forgiveness, then forgive yourself. And if people blame you, and maybe there's truth in what they're saying, truth doesn't mean it's the total truth. If somebody's blaming you and there's making you feel guilty, maybe there's truth in what they're saying. But most likely, it's not the total truth. So, you know, don't allow yourself to be crucified on a cross. Well, I'm not talking about the biblical injunction to be crucified with Jesus. That's something the Holy Spirit does. I'm talking about when people, because they're in pain or whatever, decide to crucify you on a cross. You don't need to be crucified on a cross in that sense, because Jesus Christ already died for the penalty of your sins on a cross. So you're set free. If you've asked God for forgiveness for what you did wrong, you're set free from the condemnation of those things. So let's say you weren't the most loving. Okay, well, you asked for forgiveness. You've tried to make amends. You've asked God for forgiveness. You've trusted Jesus to cleanse you with his blood. Okay, so you're forgiven of those sins. And you may not be perfect now. None of us are, by the way. So don't allow people to put yokes of bondage on you, or guilt or manipulation. And then recognize that a lot of people kind of freak out during the holidays. And they'll be angry, and they'll strike out and act weird. And you know what I'm saying? Don't get caught up and entangled in it. Kind of like learn to step out of the way. It's not being cold. It's not being insensitive. It's like if you're not supposed to be absorbing, if you're going to be like a sponge absorbing everybody's pain and suffering and guilt and unhappiness, and you're going to be emotionally crushed. None of us are built to handle all that stuff. You know, Jesus said, "My burden is easy, my yoke is light." Allow Jesus to carry the burdens. Yeah, allow Jesus to carry the yokes. And pray and release things to God. In other words, don't just get caught up in everything, every storm that comes your way. Just don't get caught up in it. Step out of the way. It's not cold. It's not being detached. And moment by moment, just call on the Lord for his help and wisdom. Don't always just immediately react. Recognize before it happens that people are going to throw you some curveballs. So don't be unprepared and don't think that you have to come up with some snappy answer. Just dodge the bullet, so to speak. Get out of the way and walk with the Lord. But when, if you're visiting people, pray for yourself, pray for the people that you're visiting, that the peace of the Holy Spirit would be poured out. Bind the activity of principalities and powers. Ask that the Lord would fill you with supernatural love for people that you're visiting with. Pray for safety as you travel, whether it's driving or flying or taking a bus or whatever it is, pray for safety. Ask for God's angels to surround you and the people that you love, because a lot of people are drunk during the holiday season and they're out of control, and you want to be supernaturally protected from that. Pray for people as God puts it on your heart to pray for them. And if you will make, if you'll purpose in your heart to walk in the Spirit of the Lord, He'll fill you with His supernatural peace. He'll fill you with His supernatural anointing. And the peace of God that passes all understanding will guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. And you'll walk under the anointing of the Holy Spirit. So that requires wisdom, but it also requires a willingness on your part to walk in partnership with the Lord. And you do that by calling on the Lord and by praying and keeping your eyes focused on the Lord and listen to the Lord when He speaks to you. In a sense, what I'm trying to share with you is to be really just tell it like it is. I'm just trying to share with you how to get through Christmas. Now, I'm not saying rush through a remembrance of the birth of Jesus Christ, but I'm talking about the synthesis of a commercialized, secularized, sometimes forced social interaction season of time, how to get through that and survive it and be an overcomer spiritually. So I'm mixing practical wisdom with spiritual wisdom. God bless you, and remember this. And by the way, remembering this is everything. Jesus Christ is the reason for the season. And the real reason for Christmas is not the gifts and the materialism and all the rest of the stuff. The real reason for Christmas is supposed to be the celebration of the birth of Jesus. And many people you talk to know nothing about the birth of Jesus. The only thing about the birth of Jesus they know is what they see in you. And I'm not telling you that to put another burden on you. Just walk with the Lord, call on His name, and allow the Lord to shine through you. And ask for His grace. Ask Him for His grace. Pray His grace over households, over gatherings. And if you do that, the Lord will walk with you during this Christmas season, and you'll experience victory rather than despondency. You'll experience hope rather than despair, because the true meaning of Christmas is the birth of Jesus Christ, our Savior. And without the birth of Jesus Christ, there would never have been the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. We would never have been saved. And without the birth of Jesus Christ, there would be no possibility of the second coming of Jesus Christ. So let's celebrate the good news of Jesus Christ as best we can. God bless you. I'm Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us.